To the Tuga, the Everything Portuguese Soccer Podcast by the fans, for the fans. I'm Kevin, that's Christian, that's Mitch. Thank you all for tuning in. Boys, where's you got some coffees there, but where's the champagne? Why aren't we celebrating the big win by FC Porto for the 30th time champions of Liga Portugal? You guys thought I was going to talk about the Oilers, but yes.
You got me all excited.
Big like, win for them. You should be excited. Porto, a record-breaking season for them. Their 30th league championship. And what's interesting with that, of course, boys, is that they are now just 7 titles back of Benfica for most all time. So, you know, in the next within the next 20 years, they will surpass Benfica, obviously, because Benfica is just... in shambles, and they're a disaster. And even Mitch knows that's why he's drinking a coffee, so he doesn't say anything. But boys, let's start with Porto. Again, what can you say? It was a nearly flawless season from top to bottom.
Well, you know, winning the league without losing is not for everybody, right? So, no, they must have got 91 points, but they still lost before being crowned champions. No, I'm just joking, but yeah, 91 points, great feat. Some of the games they had were questionable. Maybe that's just the bitterness in me. But, yeah, good for them, man. 91 points, definitely easy. Especially, I'm going to let Mitch carry this on. It's probably a sensitive subject for him. But being crowned at the Stade de Luge, that was tough. And I got to add one more thing before I let Mitch go on a rant. I thought it was ironic. Well, I wasn't surprised that once Porto won the league, you had to watch it on Benfica TV, and they did not show anything of Porto lifting a trophy or celebrating. I don't blame them, but I'll let you know.
There was no trophy there. They didn't give him the trophy.
I know, but they were like celebrating and stuff. They're like, no, wonderful day.
You know what? Congrats to Porto. As much as that pains, those words burn coming out of my mouth, but yeah. They were, you know, just champions. Yeah, I mean, they did play well. I feel like foram levados ao colo.
Yeah, for sure.
Throughout the year, a lot of very very favorable refereeing decisions went their way. A lot of penalty shots, PK decisions going their way. A lot of red card decisions going their way. I think all things being equal, meaning, you know, the same level of kind of favoritism towards Porto on the refereeing side being given to Sporting and in particular Benfica, it could have been different. Not saying that they're not just winners. I think they were the better team overall, but there was a lot of very, you know, favorable calls in their direction throughout the year, which really
helped
soccer.
Them. But that's soccer, and that's the Portuguese Liga. Is you're always going to get those calls every year. You're going to have, you know, Porto fans and Sporting fans saying Benfica is the one getting all the favorable calls. You know, you're going to say that Porto is getting them. Sporting never seems to ever get the favorable calls, but you know, we still ended up doing well. But, you know, when you take a look at Porto, though, I mean, what was their key to their success? Is it Sergio Conceição? Is he the big difference here? Or what was the key to their success?
Yeah, honestly, I think you just said it perfectly. I think it was Sergio Conceição. They've been going through a lot of financial fair play. They've been struggling with money. They even sold their best players this year. So you got to give credit where credit's due. Conceição, you know, lit a fire under them, and they're playing really good. They press high. You can see that they're all united. They're all pushing the same way. So I think the main reason why they won this year was Conceição. Obviously, they have a lot of really skilled players like Vitinha, Fabvieira, you know, that helped them a lot. But yeah, for me, it was Conceição.
I think that was the big the big differentiator for Porto this year was Conceição. I think you're right. He gets the players together. I mean, we can say what we want about the refereeing and whatnot, but the fact of the matter is that team does band together, and they know how to play for each other. We all question what that team would look like when Luis Dias left in the middle of the season. I mean, he was hands down probably the best player in the league. at the time when he left. I don't think anybody can argue that. And he's proven that, you know, in Liverpool. I mean, the guy's basically almost taken Jota's spot on that top three with Mo Salah and Sadio Mane. So, I mean, Porto losing a player that, you know, that big, that important to their squad halfway through the year, and the fact that they were still able to maintain form and keep getting results without Luis Diaz was huge. You know, players like Evan Nielsen stepped up big time for them towards the end of the year. You know, I think he had a really good year for them. Otavio had a very good year for Porto, which is one of the reasons why he's being called up to the Seleção. So, you know, as much as he is, you mentioned Fabio Vieira, Vitinha, both, you know, young Portuguese players that really stood out this year for Porto. So I think there's a lot of good things to be taken away for Porto fans. You know, even losing one of the big players, it'll be interesting to see what happens next year, because there's a lot of talks about Conceição potentially leaving, maybe going to a team like PSG.
Yeah, no, I think that Conceição, there was in our group chat, there's a little bit of an argument in our chat whether he'd be a good coach there or not. But honestly, I think that's what PSG is missing, man. Like somebody that light a fire under them. You know, there's a lot of star players. There's been videos I've seen that they've talked about where players are not, you know, pressing or tracking back because they're like star players. They don't feel like they need to. That's some of the issues when you have a star-studded team is, you know, some people think that, you know, lack of better term, but they think that their shit don't stink. You know, they don't have to do the little things that really successful, hardworking teams do. Like run back, track, press. A lot of things that Porto do. And I think that he can instill that in the team. Whether it'll work or not is a different thing, because Conceição was a pretty fiery guy. Some of these guys might not go for it. But I think it'll be an interesting
So if Sergio Conceição leaves and goes to PSG, then who is his heir apparent in Porto? And does the name escapes me right now, but Braga's coach, does he become someone that you would consider in that role? I mean, look, his contract is up. And he's done a tremendous job with Braga. Now imagine what he could do with money on his side. I mean, it's clear that he's ready for a bigger team. Is Porto the right fit then if Sergio Conceição does end up moving?
I don't know. I don't know if Carvalhal steps into Porto. I really don't know. I would almost lean towards Vitor Bruno. Conceição's assistant to maybe step in. I think Vitor Bruno is a very good tactician. I think he will be more than likely stepping out on his own. I don't know if you agree with me, Christian, but he seems to be almost a little bit of the brains behind the operation, if you will. Okay. For Conceição, I don't know if you'd agree with me there, but it seems like Vitor Bruno is a little bit more of the brains behind the operation. So I think he's going to want to step. If Conceição leaves, I could see Vitor Bruno wanting to step out on his own. I don't know that he would go with Conceição to PSG. He may stay and be Porto's coach if he does leave.
Yeah, I agree. And I don't think Carvalhal, although he's a good coach, is fiery enough to play for Porto. He's more of a calm presence. I mean, it could work. Who knows? But I don't think he's that, my personal opinion, that fiery coach that they strive for, like a Conceição. Mm. So that's why I think Vitor Bruno would make more sense take that spot if he does go.
I honestly think it's going to be really... I'm going to be shocked if Conceição leaves, I'll be honest with you, because I think he is so ingrained right now in Porto and their DNA and who they are and what they're doing. And he's got a very, very, very close relationship with Pinto Costa. You know, they often refer, you know, one another as kind of father-son figures. Like, they're very, very close. So I don't know. I don't see Conceição leaving. I think it would be interesting to see him at a different club, like a PSG, because I'd like to see what he can do in a league where he doesn't have, you know, the influence that kind of Porto has in Portugal. It'd be interesting to see how he can get a team playing and what kind of results he can get. And you brought up a great point. Egos at a team like PSG, I mean, it's very different going from coaching Port to going to to coach a team like PSG. I mean, the level of egos that you now have to manage is, I mean, it's just on a totally different level, especially at PSG, where now you're at a team where they're demanding almost Champions League success. I mean, it's such a massive step up in terms of expectations, in terms of people managing. That I think it would be a big, big challenge for even a guy like Conceição, as kind of hard-nosed as he is.
For sure. It would
be a big challenge to manage.
Also, he better be getting paid a lot, because he's going to have to be paying for all those suspensions that he's going to be getting for calling all refs and spitting at him and fighting other coaches.
Milton Carvalho tuning in. Thanks for tuning into the podcast here. Says Benfica and Sporting want Sergio Conceição out. Love it. Of course they do. Of course you do, because he is a difference maker, and he's one of the reasons why Porto has been so successful. Much like I'm sure Porto and Benfica would want Ruben Amorim out of Sporting, because he's single-handedly helped turn around the Sporting in the last couple of years.
Not only that, we want Jorge Jesus to go back to Benfica. Oh, in a perfect world, right?
It's Mitch's favorite manager. Okay, Mitch, serious question. Serious, and this is totally off topic here, but just because you brought it up, Jorge Jesus or Fernando Santos? Which one is your favorite here?
Fernandes.
I'll go with Jorge Jesus. I'd rather him over Fernandes.
I'll take Fernandes over Jorge Jesus any day of the week. Did you hear the gaffe, by the way? Speaking of Jorge Jesus, did you hear the gaffe that he made?
Yeah.
Referring to Pep Guardiola. So again, a little off topic, but since we brought up Jorge Jesus, he was being interviewed in Brazil, and they were asking him, a question, and he said, Pep Guardiola made the comment once when I was coaching Benfica. If you want to see a good team defend, just watch Benfica play. This was Guardiola. Well, when Guardiola made that comment, Rui Vitória was actually the coach of Benfica.
Oh yeah, I heard that.
Like, this guy, man, he is just and I don't know if you guys have been following, but he's gone to Brazil, and he's, you know what, I lost a lot of respect, because he went down there. Paulo Souza is obviously coaching Flamengo right now, and he went down there and he's making a chalet like crazy. He basically made a comment that he's there, he's willing to go back to Flamengo, but he only had until the 20th of May to decide. And of course, you know what Jorge Jesus is in Flamengo, and of course it's just causing a big disturbance in Paulo Souza trying to solidify himself as the manager of Flamengo. It's just a shit show.
You know what? I'm sure Benfica doesn't want him back, but I'm sure they miss all the comedy and all the one-liners.
He's pure comedy. He's entertainment. So no different than Bruno Carvalho.
Yeah.
I love Bruno Carvalho to come back to Sporting. Oh, nothing else for the entertainment.
For sure. Hey, what do you think? One more thing. What do you think of Jorge Jesus going on Big Brother next year? I think that would be a good addition.
You know what? If he does it, he needs to do it with Bruno Carvalho. Bruno Carvalho needs to go back on Big Brother with Jorge Jesus, and that would be pure entertainment.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God.
So, just getting back on topic here with Liga Portugal. So, we've talked a little bit about Porto. I guess before we continue on, let's just kind of – the way it all kind of panned out – FC Porto, 91 points, good for the league title. Sporting finishing second with 85 points. Benfica third with 74 points. Braga fourth with 65. Gil Vicente fifth with 51. So Porto, Sporting, automatic qualification into the Champions League. Benfica goes into the Champions League qualifiers. And Braga and Gil Vicente go into the Europa Conference League. Is where they'll be heading. The first time Gil Vicente going into European action there. Going to be sad as they go down to the second division. I just had to throw that in. And Tondela going down as well. Interesting note with Tondela is they're going down to the second division, but if they beat Porto in the Portuguese Cup, in Taça de Portugal, they automatically get to play in Europe. So imagine Tondela, second division team, playing in Europe next year. That'd be pretty interesting. Rio Ave and Casa Pia have been promoted to the first division. Casa Pia, it's only the second time in their history in the Primera Liga, the first time since 1938-39. So their fans, if they have any, I'm sure they do, they have a couple, they'll be pretty happy about that. So that'll be like, I don't even know where is Casa Pia? Where do they even play out of?
I think it's in Lisbon. It's in Lisbon, close to Lisbon. Yeah, that's Ruben Amorim's old team. I don't know if you guys knew that. Fun fact.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, so
yeah,
that'll be fun when Sporting gets to play against them.
Yeah, he started there his coaching career, and then he went to Braga, and then he went to Sporting. Before we move on, I wanted to ask, as a whole, what would you rate Porto's season?
Yeah, okay.
B plus, A minus, A plus.
A plus. 86 yeah. goals, 91 points, one loss. I mean, it was a dream season for Porto, I mean, and they did well in Europe as well, but a dream season for Porto, without a doubt, A plus.
Yeah, I would go A plus for me would be if they went past Lyon. They went a little bit further in the Champions League. I think A plus, that's like the perfect season. I would go A minus. Obviously in the season, A plus. If you're just basing it on Liga Portugal, A plus all day. They also finished with the best attack and best defense in the league. So I mean, in terms of the Portuguese league, A plus. But yeah, that loss to Lyon, I think they were in sixth place or seventh place in the French league at the time, sort of dampened them a little bit. Like when I say a little bit, I honestly mean just a little bit. But yeah, A minus for me.
I'd probably say just the, you know, A minus probably. Yeah. I mean, they played very well. I didn't like the way they played, and you know, outside of the tactics. I you know, there was a lot of flopping around. Like it's almost like a culture. The way that Porto plays, they're constantly looking for penalties. The way Taremi play, oh my god, he just irks me to no end. I don't like that, and I think that's something that it's almost become a bit of a culture in the way they play, and I don't like that part of their game. You know, but aside from that, they did play well. Yeah. I agree. You know, the only thing is, you know they would have liked to have gone further in Europe. You know, and I think maybe that in itself, and not getting past Lyon, I think, you know, was a bit of a, yeah, it makes you start to think, you know, again, without the support of some of those calls, you know, do they go as far, you know, do they get as many points as they do, as many results as they did in the Liga, when you look at the way they played outside of Portugal this year?
For sure.
That's the only, you know, big question mark that arises with this Porto team.
I totally agree. Like, and I know I referenced this many times, but I just think it's such a big thing where they went out of 14 games, they played against 10 men, 10 of those 14. And then out of the big six, almost every game they put the man up. Whether it was deserved or not, that's up for debate. But, I mean, it does add a lot of question marks. And also, it has a lot of question marks on the refereeing in Portugal, the culture of Portugal. But we'll leave that whole conversation for another day.
that's another day there. Havoc tuning in as well says, give them an Olympic diving score of 10. Again, domestically, I'll give them a 10. If you're factoring in Europe and all that stuff, then yeah, I'd give them a 9 on the season. Then if we're factoring in the European stuff, for all the points that you guys made, that yes, you know, they certainly slipped up there a little bit. So we'll have to see what happens there. So that's Porto. Let's move on to Sporting, finishing second, the defending champions finishing second, 85 points. You know, they, European wise, they made it out of the group stage of the Champions League, which was a big positive for them. Obviously, they went up against Manchester City, and you know, always tough against a team like that. But for Sporting, I guess my question for you is, at the beginning of the year, had someone said, hey, Sporting's going to finish the year with 85 points, chances are we're all going to be saying, oh wow, they're going to be crowned champions again. Like, do you know what I'm saying? Like, 85 points in a season, that's pretty remarkable. It's just unfortunate for them that Porto was just a little bit more, ended up with a few more wins there to differentiate that. But 85 points for Sporting, even though they didn't win the championship, it's still a pretty successful season in my books.
Yeah, if, I don't know if you guys knew this. Last season, we had 85 points and we won the league. So we equaled our point mark from last year. Most seasons, 85 points, we'll do it. Anywhere from 82 on, it's, you know, most of the time you're winning the league. So, I don't know, like, I think overall, Sporting didn't have a bad season. They went, they tied the furthest they ever went in the Champions League. And they won two trophies. They won the TAS, the Liga. They won the Super Cup. They played really good, and they added all these other games. A lot of people were criticizing Sporting for last season, saying they didn't play too many games in Europe and stuff. They had no fans. That was a big thing. But, I mean, with all those elements, we finished with the same amount of points as last year.
Yeah.
I think overall, it's not a bad season. People forget, even me, that I'm a little excited that we're still, you know, rebuilding. We're still a growing team, a very young team. And yeah, I think we definitely overachieved last year. And you see all the pillars, what this team's doing, the culture, who we're adding in. I mean, I think we're trending in the right direction. I think overall, I would consider it not a bad season at all.
What do you think was missing from Sporting versus last year? Like, what was that key piece that you feel that you guys are missing to actually get you guys to the top?
So it's not a sellout answer. It's going to be 100, now with time to reflect and actually, you know, dissect the team now that the season's over. I think we're missing a really good forward. We don't have a matador. Like, one reason why Porto was very successful, they had three good puntadores. They had three guys that can score. That, you know, just murderers. We don't have that. We have players like Sarabia, that was pure class, that, you know, good, he could finish, but we didn't have Matador. I think Paulinho, even the games that we lost against Braga and Santa Clara in particular, he had chances where he missed, whereas a good forward most of the time, those are the games they show up and, you know, they score. So we're missing a great forward. We're missing another defenseman. You know, there's a couple key areas that, you know, in these seasons and in the Portuguese league, it's a game of inches, man. Like, we only lost three times. You know, like, it's so, the margin's so small. Like, sometimes just one or two games can go from winning the league and not, right? So those are highlighted for sure.
You know, you obviously watch closer than any of us there, Christian. What is going on with Ruben Amorim and Slimani? Like, what happened there? How did they fall out? And did that negatively affect the team?
I don't think it negatively affected the team, because I don't think we lost ever since that, when that incident happened. I know it was at the end of the year. What Ruben Amorim, what I'm getting out of it, and obviously the media, or they're covering it up a lot. They're not letting a lot out of the press. But what I do know is Ruben Amorim was emphasizing that he doesn't want anything to ruin the culture in the team. He was emphasizing that he doesn't want Sporting to go back the way they were. So, basing on what he's saying, it seems like Slimani, you know, was almost like a cancer there. He was stirring the pot. I know a big thing is that Ruben Amorim always talks about. He said those who train the hardest will play. So, given all the information I'm getting, it seemed like Slimani was not training hard enough. And Slimani was upset that he didn't get called to play the game, because he wouldn't even make the substitute bench. Mm-hmm. So there must have been a bat de boca. There's even rumors, I don't know how true this is, you know, things stir up, that Kovac and him got into a fight. I don't know if it was a full fist fight, but I don't know if it was a bat de boca or some argument. So there was some drama there. And then the nail that in the coffin for Slimani is when he went to social media saying that even without eating or drinking, he was on Ramadan, I still train hard. Mm-hmm. And that was the nail in the coffin, because you don't release that stuff to social media, right? That's a no-go. And I think that was what eventually ended his time at Sporting. And it's sad, because he's a club legend. A lot of people are excited, including me, to have him back. And he didn't do bad. I could be butchering these stats, but I believe in 9 games, he had 4 goals and a couple assists. Better than Paulinho, right?
Yeah.
But, I mean, I totally get it. You don't want a player to come in and ruin the locker room. That was one of Sporting's main strengths last year, of how united we are and how, you know, our locker room was so, you know, close-knit.
4 goals and 1 assist in 9 games.
Yeah, so I was right. So, again, we'll back Ruben Amorim 100%. He's the coach. He knows what's best. So, as far as I know, that's what happened.
So, Sporting, I would give them a B-plus on the season. I mean, again, 85 points in any other year, you're league champion. They made it out of the group stage in Champions League, which is always a huge plus for the for Team like Sporting. So I would say definitely a B-plus for them this year.
I'd say A-minus, man.
Yeah.
I think Sporting have nothing to be, you know, ashamed of this year. I mean, like Kev said, any other year, that many points, you're champion. I think they just came up against a bit of a better scoring team in Porto. And I think in my opinion, the way I see it, the big thing Sporting was missing this year in comparison to last year was a hot putt. Yeah. I mean, but last year, Pedro Gonçalves, you know, he was scoring at will. And I think, you know, it was having that just constant vein of scoring coming from someone, I think, is what Sporting was really missing, that they couldn't tap into that constant vein of scoring form, like somebody like a Pedro Gonçalves had last year for Sporting, which was constant. And that's so important, is that one player that you can always almost count on to put the ball in the back of the net for you. Yeah. Even though he's not a pure striker, he was just always in the right position at the right time, and he finished. And I think that to me was the big thing that Sporting lacked this year in comparison to last year. Yeah. This year in comparison to last year was that just constant, you know, vein of scoring form from someone.
And we were injured a lot this year, but that's every team goes through injuries. Mm-hmm. But in particular this year compared to last year, Pohu last year was a pillar for us, like absolute murderer on the right wing. Scored a lot of big goals for us, even though he's a right back. Brought a huge element. He was injured. Pot was injured. Pedrinho was injured. Yeah. And we don't have the luxury like other teams yet to have, you know, some, like really, really good depth. You know, one thing that, you know, at least last year, we didn't have a really good bench. We had our main team. Luckily, we stayed healthy. But I think that also, you know, came into account.
I think even defensively, you guys had a good year. I think that was a big concern. You know, you have an aging back line with Coates and with Luis Neto. It's a bit of an aging back line. So I think that was – but you guys had the most clean sheets this year out of anyone. 18 clean sheets. I think Adan had a great year again. You know, but you guys just signed Saint – what's his name?
Saint-Just. Saint-Just. He's a big, big player. He – I don't know if you guys knew this. It's a crazy stat, especially with in a league where they have guys like Alfonso Davies. He was clocked – fastest player in the Bundesliga, and he's a defenseman. He comes from a team that plays three at the back, just like Sporting. I'm sure that was a big thing for Ruben Amorim. He's a great ball moving center back, almost like an Anasu. And that's into our formation, the way we like to play. He'll fit in like a glove. I think it was a very good strategic buy. I think
he takes Luis Neto's spot.
Oh, easy. I think he's already in. Oh yeah. It's nothing against Luis Neto. He's older, right? I'm sure if it was like 5-6 years ago, it would be a lock. I used to speak highly of Net, but yeah, he comes in for sure. He's actually the most expensive center back we've ever bought in the history of a club. So we bought him. So
then we move on to the third place finishers. Benfica, who finished with 77 points. It was very much a struggle domestically. They had struggles both on the pitch and off the pitch, as we all know so well. And then they actually did really well in Europe. They did better than maybe some of us even thought they would. So there's certainly signs of positivity. There's certainly signs that things might be turning around, but there are changes afoot. So Mitch, what happened? What went wrong? And what does next season look like for Benfica?
Yeah, this was a tough year for Benfica. You know, it was very much a transition year. You know, with everything that happened with Luis Felipe Vieira, it was very much the ushering in of a new kind of era for Benfica. And it was a big transition from, you know, an era of Luis Felipe Vieira that and a kind of a phase that Vieira tried to just spend like crazy to try and get us European success. You know, I think the over 110 million euros was spent on that squad, you know, between bringing Jorge Jesus in, bringing Darwin, you know, last year, and all the money we spent, João Mário, I mean, you know, Ubaigo, the list goes on and on. We brought in a lot of players, you know, bringing Jorge Jesus. I think it was the expectations were so high for Benfica. Anybody who spends that kind of money, I mean, automatically, not even from the outside, but within, internally, you know, you now set that bar that you have to be winning trophies. I mean, if you're going to be spending that kind of money, you better be winning trophies. And, you know, I think Jorge Jesus had a really difficult time when everything with Luis Felipe Vieira happened. There was a lot of people who were against Jorge Jesus coming to the team already. Obviously, Luis Felipe Vieira and Jorge Jesus very close. So as soon as everything happened with Luis Felipe Vieira, anybody within the Benfica camp that was kind of against o Vieirismo, if you will, kind of saw Jorge Jesus as still being linked to that kind of dark cloud that was in Benfica's past. So he was up against it right away because, you know, within already as it was, there was a lot of Benfica fans that weren't a fan of him coming back just because of the history when he went to Sporting and all the shit that happened there. And it just got amplified to a whole other level when everything happened with Vieira and when he left his squad. So I think he was just in a bad spot, and everybody wanted him out as soon as, you know, he started, you know, losing. He actually didn't do horrible. If you really look at the stats, he didn't do horrible when he was there. But I think it was just that dark cloud of Vieira that was over him, and it was never going to work. So it was a tough year. It's very much a transition year. You know, I think next year is going to still be another transition year because, you know, we made the mistake of not hiring a solid coach. You know, Nelson Verissimo came in, it was a patch job. And now, you know, we're bringing in Roger Schmidt, which, you know, I'm not crazy about Estrangeiro coaches in Benfica, but we'll see how he does. You know, could be what Benfica needs. I could be wrong. I'm personally not a fan of it. I would have liked to see, you know, they bring in a Portuguese coach. I think there's enough of them out there that would have done a good job. I would even be okay bringing back Rui Vitória. Like, you know, I would be okay with something like that. But we'll see what Roger Schmidt does. I think the team needs a new face. I think we absolutely need to hold on to Darwin. I hope to God we do not sell Darwin. I think we need him in the team. He was the one bright spot this year for Benfica. He's definitely the standout player. But if I have to rate Benfica's year, I mean, it's a C- all day.
Yeah. And I think it's only a C minus because of how good they did in the Champions League, or else
it'd
be even.
It would have been a D. You're right. You're 100% right.
Yeah, and I don't know how many points they finished behind Porto, but that's unacceptable for Benfica standards. And this is not a rubbing salt in the wound at all. What I'm about to say, I honestly mean this genuinely. Like, Benfica not winning a title in 3 years, that's a no-go for you guys, man. Like, that cannot happen.
Well, especially after the money that we spent.
Yeah, yeah. And, but yeah, like, you're talking about Darwin. I honestly think it's nearly impossible for him to stay for the investment they're making. They're going to build, from what I'm seeing, I know it's all rumors, but they're going to be building a good team. Schmidt's going to come in there and bring a bunch of guys. And I think that Darwin money, which is looking like it's well over 100 million again, will help build the team. And I think as good as Darwin is, and he is special, he is almost like a Luis Diaz, not playing style, but in terms of being that special player that you can see that they're, you know, bigger than the Portuguese league. You just know it's a matter of time before he's gone. But I think as a whole, with that money you can get from him, you're going to build a better base. But yeah, you were also talking about a Estrangeiro coach. I don't remember the last time a Estrangeiro coach had success in the Portuguese league. Maybe Trapattoni.
Trapattoni, that's what I was just
going to say. Trapattoni is probably the last one that comes to mind that actually had success. But we'll see. There's some big names that look like that comes in. It's that David Neres looks pretty good. You guys are even linked with Götze and, you know, these players. So we'll see.
The struggle with these Estrangeiro coaches, they struggle with the culture.
Yeah.
The culture of football in Portugal. It's on another level.
And you're bang on, because really at the end of the day, it doesn't matter where you're from, as long as you can coach, you can coach. That's what's important here. But there are major differences and little inside things in the Portuguese league, right, wrong, or in between, especially when it comes to officiating and just learning how to navigate through those rough waters. And that's what makes it difficult for an outsider coming in, because they just don't know the little idiosyncrasies that make the Portuguese Liga what it is.
Yeah, then that's where I think he might struggle. You know, I don't think he's a bad coach. I just think to coach in the Portuguese league, especially in today's day and age, you really have to know, like Kev says, how to navigate the media, how to navigate all of those little, you know, inside kind of intricacies that you know, I don't know how he'll do. It's really a big question mark. I'm not a fan of the Estrangeiro coach. I hope he proves me wrong. I really, really do. But this is a big, big decision for Rui Costa. Probably the biggest decision he's had to make since yeah. coming in as president. And he's rolling the dice here. He really is. You know, you can kind of compare it a little bit to when Varandas splashed the cash on Ruben Amorim. He rolled the dice, man. Everybody was either going to say you're crazy spending that kind of money to bring this coach over who, you know, really hadn't proven himself. I mean, he was doing a really good job at Braga, but I mean, he hadn't won anything. It was a big roll of the dice, and luckily for Sporting, it turned out. And that's kind of what Rui Costa has done here with Roger Schmidt, I feel.
And this is the first time where you can actually legitimately 100% criticize Rui Costa if it doesn't work out, because he was sort of in a weird year. He was taking over Vieira's job.
Yeah.
It was pretty unfair to really criticize him. But now this is going to be Rui Costa's team. This is going to be Rui Costa's coach. This is going to be his identity. Mm-hmm. This next season is going to be hyphenated. What's going on with Benfica?
My biggest thing with Roger Schmidt is, how is he going to handle the youth? I think Benfica has a ton of depth in the youth right now, and I think we need to tap into that. You saw it on the last game this Friday against Barcelona. We brought up a lot of young kids, and man, I like the way they played. I really, really like the way they played. They played a lot of young kids. Henrique Araújo scored 2 goals. I mean, he looked really good. This kid's been hot in the second division in Benfica B. So I'd like to see him come up. Again, what kind of relationship is Roger Schmidt going to have? What kind of connection is he going to have with the youth? Is he going to give the youth a chance? Is he going to bring up some of the youth, or is he going to more concentrate on whatever the new blood that he kind of brings into the team? Is he going to try to focus more on that? That's the big question mark to me, because I do think we need a little bit of an injection of some of that youth into the team.
For sure. And Sporting went through that for years too. Now it's Benfica. We had so many years where we had so many good youthful players, good young players, but we'd go out and buy a player from Brazil or a player from Colombia. Mm-hmm. And instead of giving these guys a chance. Then like, look at last year, Sporting was... It was an example for the league. We were rated fourth to win the league last year. Braga was ahead of us, but we invested in our youth. We had a lot of good players. And a good thing about the youth is they know the culture of the team. Yeah. They know the logo that they play for. They understand. When you bring in these guys,
It's just a job.
That badge doesn't weigh as heavy. And a lot of these guys play together. They're in, day out, and they experience that feel for the club. So. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's definitely going to be a huge question mark for Benfica if he's going to come in.
And then Ilunte Ligação with the B team. Right?
Yeah.
Like, he's probably going to bring in his whole team, and they're not tapped into what's going on in the youth level. So they're going to be really relying on, you know, insiders at Benfica to tell them, you know, what's going on at the youth level. Whereas, you know, somebody Portuguese who comes in, they're more in sync with what's going on at the youth level. Like, if you go to Roger Schmidt right now and you ask him, you know, who's Thiago Veia, who's, you know, Henrique Araújo, you know, he's probably not going to know. Like, he's completely in the dark.
To be fair, any new coach very likely wouldn't be in the know either.
Yeah.
Right now. to be fair. I mean, you're
if it's
still
a if it's a Portuguese coach though, Kev, they're following it. Like anybody in Portugal right now would know, you know, if you're following, you know, second division, whatever, like you've got a pretty good knowledge at least of who the main kind of star players are that are up and coming, and you've been watching them, you know, a little bit. So I that's the one thing that I just feel that.
But that's where I think Rui Costa has got to establish himself, because like you're talking about Ruben Amorim. When Ruben Amorim went there, Varandas had a conversation and he was really vocal about it. He even went on the Portuguese news talking about it. He wanted to have a certain percentage of the starting team from the academy. And even when Ruben Amorim got hired, he said, this is what I want. Mm-hmm. Can you do this? I want to have this much from the academy. And then all those little holes that were missing, then you bring in, you do strategic buys. So that was established when he was hired. So Rui Costa really believes in this youth and he does want to implement that. I know Schmidt's the coach. He is the last say, but if he's hired on the precedence of, you know, bringing in some youth players, then, you know, it would help. That's where I think Rui Costa, again, I'm going to emphasize it. This is going to be a big year for Rui Costa too, 100%. To establish himself.
I bet you wish you still had Jota on Benfica. 9 goals and 10 assists with Celtic.
Honestly, yeah. Bring him back. I don't know what's happening.
Well, Celtic is making a huge push to keep him, obviously, right? And he.
I think we need him. I think we need that depth on the wings that we don't really have right now. I mean, look at the last game against Porto. Yeah. You know, we didn't have Rafa. We didn't have Everton. Diogo Gonçalves is really a makeshift winger. After Rafa and Everton, who do you have? Who's with you? Gil Dias? I mean, Gil Dias doesn't cut it for me. Like he's not the player. I mean, we're going after Ricardo Horta. I'd love to see Ricardo Horta there. We need a player like Ricardo Horta. So I think Benfica, if we can snap up someone like a Ricardo Horta, that would be huge for us. I would love to see him at Benfica. It'd be a huge, massive, massive pickup. And I would say bring Jota back. I think Jota could be one of those clinch kind of wingers off the bench and we need depth in that position. So I'd absolutely bring him back.
Except for him, in his case, he'll probably just want to stay with Celtic right now because he's guaranteed first time playing, right? And that was one of his big issues before.
Yeah. Well, one more thing, because he brought up Ports. Do you think that was offside, the 2 centimeter offside? Do you agree with it?
Now you just open
up. I have to ask that.
Man, this is what frustrates me about Benfica, you know, Benfica's year and decisions going back to decisions with VAR and a lot of the decisions you know, for Port and Benfica, like do you realize 2 centimeters what that is? Like to me it's like, number one, there should almost be a margin of error, whether it be 2, 3, 4 centimeters, whatever it is, there should be a margin, because that doesn't affect the play. Like that 2 centimeters to me is crazy. And then the other question I have is, man, like what frame are you using? Like, like we're talking millimeters now, right? Like what frame are you using to determine it?
Yeah, you can manipulate where he touches the ball,
you
right?
You have to be timing it the second buddy's foot touches the ball. You have to time it down to the millisecond to determine his position. Like, man, I feel like it's so touch and go. Obviously, if the technology says that he was off, then he's off, but it hurt, man. To not win a game based on, you know,
centimeters.
VAR is very controversial. There's definitely a place for it, and it's definitely
Kev, if VAR isn't there, the linesman is never flagging that offside.
Yeah,
like ever, right? So that's, you know,
you're right, and that's the part. I struggle with the whole you have to have a margin of error, because once you start going down that territory, well, what's the margin of error? So if you're doing 3 millimeters, is that the margin of error? Well, what happens if it's 4? Or like, do you know what I'm saying? Like, you're always going to have the, well, what if? But so, and that's the difficulty, is like, you look at hockey, for example. Hockey, it's pretty straightforward because you have a solid blue line. That blue line doesn't move. So you know definitively you can have a camera right on that blue line. So it's very easy to tell. with VAR, it's a little bit different because you're working with camera angles, you're working different and it becomes a little bit more difficult in that aspect. And you're right, it comes down to the spirit of the game, the spirit of the moment or whatever. But like you said, if the technology says this is the case, it's the case. It sucks to lose a game that way. I mean, put it this way. Imagine this was in a World Cup final, and this was Portugal against whomever, and that's the way your team loses. I mean, that's pretty heartbreaking.
Like, man, in the VAR, and this is where, I might get a little controversial, but how much influence does the culture in Porto have on these refs and the decisions that they're making in the VAR box? The game's in the Luge. If they win, they win the title. Is the VAR going to call it against Port? And what type of influence and what type of pressure is on the VAR in that particular instance to make sure he makes a call in favor of Port?
And that's where you hope and you have faith that it's impartial. And that's just what you got to go by, right? I mean, they're all professional.
But let's call a spade, man. When we're in a league that you've had referees, Porto fans have tracked down where a referee lives and has spray painted on their door. I mean, there is that little bit of culture of intimidation there that you don't know what type of pressure and what type of things are happening behind the scenes to.
Now,
give them a little nudge to make a decision one way or the other, man.
To be fair, though, it's not like it's a game that would have decided a championship for Porto, though. Like, even if Porto had lost that game, they're still going to end up winning the championship, right? It's delayed a week. So from that aspect, the pressure on someone would be a little bit less, but yes, I do see your point. There is definitely a lot of question marks with it, just given the fact, the history of this Portuguese league, for sure.
And ironically, when Porto lost to Braga, Conceição was back, but he went to go shake the ref's hand, and then he pulled his hand away, and he said something to him. He was pissed, and he was complaining that it was robbed, this ref, every time he plays against them, he robs them. So
I
never happy, stuff. Right? So,
but you know what, though? I hate that stuff. And much like we say that we want a better standard of officiating, there also needs to be a higher 100%. Standard for coaches and management that you got to start treating the referees with respect.
100%
agree. When my dad used to play soccer back in the 70s or whatever, he used to always say, that it was only the captain that would be able to go up to a referee and hands were behind the back. Like, let's start bringing back some decorum and some respect in the game because that's how you start to fix things.
That's the one thing we need to stamp out.
100%.
The league has to start protecting the refs because, I mean, we talk, the level of officiating in the Liga Portuguesa this year was
horrendous.
Probably the worst I've ever seen. I think, like, we're gonna rate the arbitrage this year like be an F all day. It was horrible, and not just in Benfica games, in just other regular games, some of the decisions were appalling. And I think the standard of officiating, that's something that we need to work on. But we also need to work on coaches and players. We need to adopt something more along the lines of what we see in the EPL. You cannot say a word about refereeing or you will be slapped with a massive fine.
Yep.
I mean, I always use this example, but I'll never forget, I think it was about 2 years ago, Nuno Espírito Santo, when he was coaching Wolves, made a comment that the referee didn't have he didn't even say anything bad. All he said was, I don't think this referee has the quality to be refereeing in the EPL. That was the comment he made. He was slapped with a £25,000 fine for saying that. I think, I'm not maybe saying that drastic, but we as a league, we need to crack down on how we talk about the refs because it creates, man, I would never be a referee in Portugal. You could not pay me enough money to be a ref in Portugal. You couldn't. I would not be able to handle it. I can tell you right now, even with a family and everything, I would not be able to handle it. I wouldn't. And I think they are just so prone to you know, unfair tongue lashings from coaches and players and assistants, and you know, it is, and then the media on the media side. I mean,
it's horrible.
It's horrible. It is horrible. The way we talk about the refs, and I think it just creates this crazy pressure. So it's kind of a double-edged sword. I mean, we need to bring the standard of officiating up, but we also need to try to stamp out the way that we talk about the referees.
Everyone has to work together, right? And if we're going to make this league a success, everyone has to push together so we can, you know, so it makes sense and it works. We're all in here for a collective reason and for the common good, and that's to make this league as successful as possible. And that means everyone, whether you're Porto fan, whether you're, you know, Sporting, Benfica, it doesn't matter. Everyone has to kind of push together. Christian, earlier in the podcast, you had made a point that, well, you know, it's tough when Benfica goes 3 years without winning a championship. Last time they did that was 2010, 2011, 2011, 2012, 2012, 2013, when Porto won three straight. So that was the last time that Benfica had gone 3 years in a row. And then before that, they had gone 4 years in a row from 05, 06 to 08, 09. And then shockingly, actually, in the 90s, 93, 94, Benfica won. And then after that, they didn't win again until 2004.
The infamous Porto.
Yeah.
The most corrupt years in Portugal's history. Right,
the big Porto, the couple Sporting wins, and then Boavista out of nowhere came out and did that. Guys, we're up against the clock here, so let's keep this short here. But looking ahead to next year. Early predictions, early thoughts. Keep in mind, next year is going to be very different because with the World Cup in November, December, there's going to be some weird breaks in there. You're going to have players that are going to be going off into international duty. So they're going to be a little, you know, it's going to be fascinating to see how well the teams adapt on coming out of the World Cup. So starting in January to see how, you know, is it essentially kind of starting from scratch? Like, it's going to be weird. So what are we thinking next year? Does Porto repeat as champions? Sporting get back up there? Is Benfica even relevant? What's the deal? What do you guys think?
Well, Benfica is definitely going to be relevant. It's going to be hard to comment on Benfica right now because there's so many question marks. They're looking like they're going to be building a crazy team, but is it going to be like a few years past where there's a transition period? You know what I mean? There's so many questions. So I don't want to sound disingenuous to Benfica. It's just too many questions. So I, as of today, I would still think it's going to be between Porto and Sporting, depending on what Benfica does. We don't know. It's a wild card.
It's a wild card.
It might come out. I might be biting my tongue.
Yeah.
But I think Sporting, that's the team I know the most, obviously. They're going to be stronger next year. The question marks are going to be, is Palhinha staying, Matheus Nunes staying? I know Sarabia is gone. It's very tough to fill in that guy's shoes. He's had an amazing season for us. We brought in a player called Fatasil Isuhaku. So hard to say. Isuhaku. But anyways, they're already making, I know it's early, whatever, but in Ghana, they're already making documentaries about him. They're already interviewing his family. They're saying he's going to be a superstar. We snubbed him from Liverpool. Keep your eyes out for Isuhaku. Isuhaku. But he's going to be a big question mark. We got St. Jude, so I think we're going to be stronger. So I think it's going to be between Porto and Sporting next year.
Yeah, I think Benfica is a wild card for sure. I think Porto too, is the question is just going to be if Conceição stays or goes. I think if Conceição stays, I think you can comfortably, you know, count on Porto being the favorite to win again. Next year, especially like you say, with Sporting losing Sarabia and potentially some other key pieces of that team that could be detrimental to them. I don't think Porto is in a big risk of losing any big players over the summer. So I think they're pretty stable. So this team that they've kind of built should kind of transfer into next year for the most part, give or take one or two players. But I think for the most part, they're gonna be the favorites for next year again, with Benfica kind of, like you say, as a wild card.
Yep.
And just quickly here, as we move on past the league, we've also got Nations League coming up next month. Portugal with four games. June 2nd, they take on Spain. June 5th, they take on Switzerland. June 9th, they take on the Czech Republic. June 12th, they take on Switzerland. That's four games in 10 days, which is pretty pretty crazy, actually. So it'll be interesting. Obviously, it's a good opportunity for Portugal to test out a few things ahead of Qatar. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see what Fernando Santos, how he handles those games. By the way, FIFA Plus has launched. It's a Netflix for FIFA. It's free. It's like a free streaming service. And you get to actually watch a lot of classic games and classic moments, including they have the Portugal-North Korea game from 1966. So if ever want to go and watch that, you can watch the entire broadcast. And you can go back and watch a lot of other classic World Cup games with FIFA Plus. Again, we're up against the clock. Any final thoughts, Christian?
No, I'm just excited for it's going to be a big year next year. We have the World Cup midseason, like Kevin, you know, talked about.
Yeah.
It's going to be a lot of question marks for all the big three and Portugal. It's going to be really excited for next year.
It's going to be an exciting year, guys. There's a lot of outside of Liga Portugal, there's a lot of players that outside of Portugal, Portuguese players that are playing very well. We're going to be talking a lot about that coming up in Nations League. Guys like Rafael Leão, who unbelievable season at AC Milan.
Linked with Man City.
You know, guys like Trincão, who are really impressing, in Wolves right now. So a lot of exciting kind of players outside of Portugal that had really good seasons and you know, could really, really make some surprises potentially and make even more headaches for Fernando Santos in terms of call-ups and whatnot. So,
like Jota from Celtic. Never gonna let that go. Mitch, Christian, I'm Kevin. Thank you so much to the Tuga, the Everything Portuguese Soccer Podcast. Don't forget to like and subscribe to the Tuga Podcast on YouTube and follow us on Spotify. Thank you so much. The pleasure has been all ours. Enjoy the Nations League as it comes up, and congratulations again to FC Porto, champions of Portugal.
And go Oilers.